Okay, so welcome to the Digital Classes Seminar, sponsored by the Institute for Classical Studies. I'll quickly plug next week's seminar, for which you'll find flyers on the table, which will be Dan Pett from the British Museum, talking about the Portable Antiquities Scheme, a tool for studying the ancient landscape of England and Wales. And it gives me great pleasure to welcome this week's speaker, all the way from Leipzig. Those of you who were at last year's seminars will recognise him. Those of you who were at the year before seminars may also recognise him. Marco Buhler, with his third appearance in this venue, is going to talk to us now about bringing modern spell-checking approaches to ancient texts, automatised suggestions for incomplete words.
Thank you. It's a really great pleasure at first to come every year to London. I really like the kind of Dutch digital classes and similar, even if I'm a computer scientist. So I like the feedback that I get from you. Yeah, 90 minute session, 45 minutes to talk. I talk to you, and then I have to deal with your questions for another half. So I like that kind, and actually we are thinking about to adapt it in Leipzig for a bit more computer science stuff. As Gabby said, maybe 2 points, ancient texts. Within my presentation, I focused on papyri, but more or less it not depends on any text stored, inscriptions, or any other kind of text. Of course, different languages as well. Modern spell-checking approaches, pragmatically for this reason. In computer science, you typically do not fill any gaps on papyri. Yeah, computer scientists more make spell-checking, and actually the techniques I show you today are quite similar to correcting OCR stuff. Maybe the detection of the damaged words by Leiden convention or by by something like OTR errors are different, but the correction step, the second step, is exactly the same. First of all, I want to start with what can you do with automatic suggestion of words for filling gaps. Then I will start with papyri.info. I had an interesting talk with UKers in the last 2 hours, and I will start by papyri.info and explain what my impression was when I started in the EPA project to work with humanists. And I realized more and more how they work, and this will be my starting point. I will show you 2 problems from my perspective. You can have, of course, a different opinion. And we'll show you something that you can do with text mining or with text mining in this case, in order to let it suggest your words automatically. I will talk about 2 tasks. On the one hand, the identification of the damaged text. So within this presentation, it's quite simple, but I will also have some explanations what we are doing, for example, what we start to do with CMIT in order to correct OCR damaged text. And the second step, the generation of the of any kind of suggestions. And I spent a long time with thinking about how to bring it to classes. So first of all, I want to bring some results by any plots, how good the approaches are. I skipped it completely out, and I will explain by way of one example and show you different strategies, what you can do with the several algorithms. And last but not least, I will end with some problems and some further steps that could be, for example, a collaboration with papyri.info. So what is the starting point? We have probably many, many things as this. Yeah, less texts are transmitted over the last centuries without any damages. We have those inscriptions, those papyri. And so this is more or less what we do have now. These are good examples, as I've seen. And so this was our starting point in Niagara. What can we do, for example, to fill this gap? This is a simple task here, maybe 2 or 1 letter is only missed. The question is, what can you do if you, for example, an entire word got lost? First of all, I do not want to go in war with humans. Yeah, for this reason, I have these 5 classes of mining. Yeah, I will talk in my presentation on the unsupervised level, means I could text into my text mining engine, learn things from these texts, and make, based on that, a suggestion. But, of course, I also have to say that even though manual work is all a class of mining, it's a high cognitive text mining, I just want to make you aware that those kind of techniques are also my text mining. Typically, with Monica Betty, I work, for example, on those five levels in order to find out how strongly you can automatize techniques in order to work with humanists. So, Debbie and some other guys who joined the last year's presentation, we have shown on the fragmentary author how strong you can automatize the different processes. So, first of all, I want to show you, this is my starting point, how you can do text correction based by information retrieval. Information retrieval means that a humanist goes, for example, to a portal such as papyri.info, has a papyri in a printed version or whatever, and finds out that the dual and oiko game, so the two words I typed here in, can be observed on the papyri. And the humanists say, okay, I choose these both words, and now give me some suggestions, or give me back some papyri where these both words are in, and then I can manually compare. So you can fill in your capitalization and stuff like this. And so the first question seems to me, this is for the same result, you get 28 hits. So the question is, do you read as a human being the first papyrus in the same way as the 28? Most probably not. Yeah. The computer, on the other hand, reads all 28 papyri, and after then he builds an opinion, and then he makes his decision. Yeah. And this is maybe the first point. As a human being, you have to read a lot of text. This can be done by the computer. And again, the question is, do you read the first hit in the same way, in the same unbased way as the last one? Probably not. What's the second stuff? I pick out any papyri from papyri.info, and in the previous example, I picked out two keywords, dual and oiko game. The question is, having a papyri as this one here, what are the keywords? Maybe two completely different keywords are significantly better. Yeah. As a human being, you have to make a decision of which keywords you are looking for. And exactly this is what I named as what are the silent words. And this means what are the good indicators for those papyri in order to compare them. So this was my starting point when we started 3 years ago with Yekwa, and I thought, okay, here he can do something complementary to those manual work in order to provide some suggestions. And the starting point was to compare it with OpenOffice, yeah, or any other Office tool. You have text, you have the task of identifying the wrong words. You see the red line here. OpenOffice or Microsoft Office says to you, okay, this wrong word is wrong, and clicking in the context menu, you get a suggestion list. So exactly those techniques I want to bring to ancient papyri, and a bit deeper. Those techniques that those Office tools, those techniques that are used by those Office tools are very, very basic. I will show some techniques that go much, much beyond those lines. So the question was, can we bring ancient text and modern spell checking approaches together? Or the other question is, language model leaves the meets classical studies. So this is more difficult as it seems to be. Yeah. Language model means to speak about highly complex statistical models, and typically classicists work in a completely different environment. So the question was, how to do that? I would skip within my presentation every equation, every formula. I have nothing mathematical in, so you do not have to run away. I will talk about what can you learn from text, or how can we make text completion by text mining, by learning from text what is in the text, and making based on that suggestions. I said it on my previous, in my introductory slide. All in all, you have two different tasks. On the one hand, you have to find the word that you want to suggest, that you want to give you a list of suggested words. So this means, on the one hand, on ancient text, that's simple. Yeah, you have the line convention. For this reason, Gabby, I asked you for your line cheat sheet in order to refer to it. Yeah. On the modern text, it's a bit more difficult. It's a question of what do you want to correct? On the one hand, I have here two approaches. One approach is by the local likelihood ratio. It measures a bit the trust that the word is written in a correct way. And the second one is from information theory that measures the amount of information in the word. No details about the math behind that. The key problem on the modern text is what do you want to correct? So for the computer, it doesn't matter if you have an OCR error, a variant of a word, or, for example, a wrong written word, a spelling error. So the computer doesn't make a distinction between those things. So whenever you start to find or try to find those words without the Leiden conventions, it typically you're typically running into problems with what do you want to correct? Yeah, OCR errors, but typically humanists are trusted not to correct the spelling errors. Yeah, they should be kept in the text. So I just want to mention that since this is highly complex to make a separation between both. And on the other hand, if this is done, oh, I know this word, I want to have a list of suggestions, then what can you do for to give a list of suggestions? The open office that I presented before typically just use algorithm from this level here. String similarity means that words are compared by the letters and suggestions based on this word similarity are provided. All other clusters of approaches I will explain very, very briefly in detail. And this is what we currently have done. If I unfold that, we can provide at the moment up to 30 techniques in order to provide suggestions. What have we done in the past? So on the one hand, we processed with the TLG. This was a bit the aqua matter. We had to do that, but since our researchers were interested in that. But within my presentation today, I will focus on the EpiTube database, but you will see the TLG on my screenshots as well. The most important thing, and this is something that I just can hardly mention to you, whenever you work with any minor techniques, the most important thing is to think about pre-processing. 50%, maybe 60% of your quality that you have by mining techniques is only decided by the pre-processing you are doing. Pre-processing means, on the one hand, techniques such as tokenization, such as segmentation, but all the cleaning steps, how do you deal with diacritics, with capitalization, and all the stuff. It depends quite often on your question you want to answer. There's typically not the standard use case that makes sense. Again, it depends a bit on what you are interested in. The second step is, I will explain it two slides later, but in detail, is about training. Training means what are the right signal words that you want to find out. I have it here. This is one of the last numbers I have here. If you do that, for example, for big corpora, yeah, and I have something like web corpora in my mind, yeah, you run very, very fast into a amount of data sets of several hundred millions of data sets. This is what you have typically to be aware of. If you deal with any minor text techniques, learning from text means you have an incredible amount of text mining data. And yeah, this is just as a hint. And the basic idea is to have separate approaches, a parallel, and every approach, every algorithm provides a score between 0 and 1, and in the end you count all the scores together and suggest on the highest, the first place, the word with the highest score, or means the word that was suggested by the most algorithms with the highest score. This is a basic idea, very, very simple, and this is what we have done in Yakwa by way of a proof of concept implementation. Maybe here some other numbers. On the TLG, you have just about 1.7 million words. It depends a bit on how do you tokenize words. And on the Epitube, you have about 450,000 unique words, just for reasons of comparisons. The first thing is, how can we, with the detection of the critical words, I have on my next slide a very, very brief look on the Latin convention, but here I have some three different brackets selected. One question that I would like to answer with humanists is, if you have a bracket as this one here, yeah, if you know that there is any deletion, yeah, which set of algorithms, they will come two or three slides later, which set of algorithms works best for this bracket? Yeah? If you know you have a deletion, this is what I heard from the classicists, you can typically assume that a person name was deleted. Then that's your memory. Yeah? And if you are aware of that, then maybe a list of person names. Yeah, something that computer scientists typically are not aware of. Yeah, if you are talking about text completion techniques, something simple such as named entity lists, word banks, are not the algorithms that computer scientists are aware. But maybe a set of this, maybe a pattern of existing letters makes sense for those clusters. This is what we have done not so far, but this is what probably is the very, very interesting question, what makes most sense. So I fear some Latin conventions on the slide, and also how they are tagged by Epidoc, and this is why I asked you to send me a reference. Yeah, exactly for this. Gabby said at this time, oh, I never expected that someone will quote my Latin cheat sheet, and yeah, whenever I have a presentation or write a paper about the gap correction, this is my standard reference. Again, it's a bit more complex if you do that on other texts than already edited texts having the Latin conventions in. I want to focus a bit on the correction of the critical words. On the one hand, you can choose the semantically best fitting word. How does it work? I have an example on the next slide, but briefly. So you're choosing the document, observing your signer words, and then you're looking in your database and looking for words that have similar occurrences. Yeah? And then you suggest a word as this. I have a very excellent example on my next slide. Syntactically means that you look for the word before or the word after that, or on a bike or on a trichome level. For example, if you have a word that is damaged and you have in front or before this word a word such as Basileus, you know that this must be king. You know that the word after that must be a person name, and not only a person name, it must be the name of a king. So you have maybe not more than several hundred words that you have to fill in. So for this reason, the tactical stuff makes sense. String similarity is the most popular class. So Levenstein distance measures the distance between two words by replacements and insertions. This approach is very fancy. It was developed about 6 or 7 years ago by some researcher in Switzerland. It computes you a lot of data, but it's very, very fast for those aspects. Word lengths, typically, as I said before, are not the first option for computer scientists, but especially if you have text like inscriptions where you can count the number of letters, yeah, it does make sense to reduce although by word lengths. Yeah. If you know that your word must have 8 or 9 letters, so it's fine. It's also an excellent restriction. And what we have done as well, we have chosen the main classification. All of the algorithms from the first two bullet points just can provide you a word that you have ever seen before, yeah, in any relation. By using those domain classification, you observe what is the class that the document you would associate, for example, mathematics or by centuries, and then you go into your database and look what are words that fit into the same class. And then you make a suggestions, maybe for a word that you have never seen in context before. This is very, very pragmatic, but it's very powerful. I have a very, very brief toy sample. Since I do not know, at least I'm a computer scientist, I'm not familiar with ancient Greek, so I've chosen a very simple toy sample. A, B, C, D, E is the Danish word, and G, H is the other last two words. Every letter means we have a word. The capitalized letter is a content word, the lowercase letters are function words. Yeah? And what you can do, for example, with a semantic approach, E is a Danish word, and you can observe K, A, C, and G. You can find the context, and now you go into the database and look for words having the same occurrences. I have done this. Let us assume E of the Danish word is Troje. You find, for example, several different versions of reflected versions of Troje, but you find yes, for example, as well. Yeah, they are certainly used, and those kind of graph matching techniques can be used in order to not only suggest words that are morphological an inflection of this word, but all the words that that have just the same context. Yeah, Ilias and Troja is one example. So technical approach, I named this before. You're looking what happens before the word and after the word, and looking in your database and which contexts they occur. I typically use Bicrom models. They work well and they have a very, very acceptable amount of data. If you go on tricrom level or quadricrom level, your data set increases dramatically. And for the word similarity, you're looking for words that have similar letter bicrons, for example, gignitai and ginitai. Here's the second gamma is missed here, or for the second example as well. They are not exactly the same, but they are very, very strong similar. And again, you can also work with named entity lists and word lengths, especially if you know that a person name was deleted. Which approach you can use for what? And this is my last slide about the technical stuff. Everything that followed after that is very, very practical. Semantical approach does make sense if you have a very, very static semantical context in order to suggest something. Or for example, if you have an ambiguous word. Yeah? Concurrences or concurrence analysis you also can use for disambiguation. Some technical approaches, I had the example before. Yeah, if you have Basileus or King and Alexander, for example, the words that you have to damage. So those indicator words, yeah, like titles, are excellent to support the syntactical the cluster of syntactical approaches. Word similarity, I said enough. Word lengths, I said enough as well. And named entities make sense if we know that there's an deletion. I have an example. I picked out papyrus. I do not know if this is an papyri.info. It's one from Leipzig, and yeah, happened. And I want to go into the first slide. Yeah. So what do you think? What stands exactly here? You are the humanists. Suggest me something. There is only one letter missed, actually. So here is the word S, and here it begins.
Is it a name?
It's a name.
Alexandros.
Yes. Yes. Alexandros, it's fine. Yeah. So on the digital edition version, it looks like that. Yeah. And so I pick out exactly this name for any kind of suggestion, but so this is simple. Yeah. Completion of one missing letter is it's not a task. It's kidding. Yeah. So I removed. I go now to the portal. I removed a bit more. I had only one missed letter. I completely cut it, and I cut it all of the last three letters and the first one as well. the capitalized letter always more or less means that the person name is what you are asking for. So I remove everything except four letters. And this is important, yeah? It depends on what you want to do, yeah? If you would, for example, have it not prepared, I would, for example, apply this document on the Thesaurus Lingua Cracker, I would get nothing, yeah? It's another training data. You have philosophy in, you have historiography in, but you have not a documentary papyri. So it depends on if you wanna, if you are interested in documentary papyri, you need a training-based database for exactly those data. Yeah, you cannot use, you cannot say I train with a TLG. It's a huge amount of data, and then you want to complete documentary papyri. This will not work. Yeah, this is very important. This is the only thing why the TLG is here. Okay, then the second task is to identify the Danish words. I said before, having the line conventions in all the brackets here, it's extremely simple to parse the stuff and build a link on that. So every word that is the blue color here is you can now click on, and if this is chosen, you can make a suggestion for this word. So I clicked on this one, then another slide. So I will provide you now three or four strategies how you can complete the word. My first strategy is I ignore the entire papyrus and I just use the information that I know about the word. This means these four letters here and the information that the word, the entire word has a length of 9 or 8. I think 9. So, yeah, I see. So this is what I use. I use these four letters. I use the length of 9. It's very, very uncomfortable to use, but it's more like a proof of concept to show if it's work. Again, the entire machine behind that has no idea about what engine Greek is. The engine just gets some data, training data. And what we have here in the columns are the different approaches. Word lengths is clear. It's the number 9 here. Provide me all words with word lengths 9. Neighbor letters means that only this and this is a lambda and the alpha character are choosing the outside letters. Words, this is done. This means, this algorithm means that the four letters, all four letters are chosen. Named entities means look into a named entity list and look if you find a word for that. Word breadcrumb means that you look on the left hand side and the right hand side for words that fit to the entire document. So this is disabled here, this is context information, and the same for the semantic occurrences. So the entire document is chosen, the entire document is chosen, and all the keywords, all the knowns, very important verbs are chosen as context information. And classification data means that we have chosen here the Heidelberg Gesamtverzeichnis. This means in detail, if I go back, that the entire document here is chosen, and the most probable class is provided to me that fits to exactly this document. Yeah. So the keywords, the assigned words in this document provide me any class information or literary class information. So the first strategy is just to use techniques that deal with what I know about it. I've chosen just the four letters and the word lengths and made a suggestion. You see several versions of Alexandra and the word that we are looking for. I marked it here. It's on the fourth place, if I see it right, and all the words have the same score. So just two algorithms, and more or less we find the right word. The second strategy. I now completely ignore what I do know about the word. I ignore the four letters. I completely ignore that I know that I look for a word having a word length of 9. I completely ignore that. I just look into the document and provide me a suggestion just by the document. I should mention that this document is not a papyrus info. I realize that. Otherwise, it would not make sense. I had this question before. So I have chosen the word bike trunks. This means I look for the word on the left and on the right hand side, the entire document words in the document, and classification data. This means this just means that the score is very, very low. And you can see here again, I can see Alexandra here on the second plate, and I completely ignored anything but the word. Typically, I would now expect from you that you say, okay, but if you have here the four letters and the length of 9, you have faked the bit. You're using that information. For this reason, the real strategy too, I went back into my input mask and removed everything from the word. So now I completely everything is destroyed. I have no information about the letters. I have no information about the word length, and you see it here. It's completely empty. Again here, nothing, and a word length of 1. And I have chosen the same 3 algorithms, and you see that Alessandro is again on the second place. And I have nothing used from the word that's was already existent. My third strategy, and this is more or less my last example, I choose everything that I can click on. Again, in the real life, we can provide up to 30 algorithms so far. In this presentation, I have chosen 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, just 7 of these bunch of algorithms. And I've chosen, for example, the word lengths. I've chosen the word similarity, named entities I missed here, word bitrams, and the context, semantic context information, as well as the classification information. And you see, if you choose more than one algorithm, we have Alessandro in the first place, and with a high score. And so this is by way of example. We currently think about to provide a public version for the APDoc data, but we just need some time that you can play with it for your own. Again, this is the slide here where I should mention some results. I could typically, in computer science, I would provide you now some plots, how good the algorithms are, but as a computer scientist, I had to learn that those kind of plots are funny for computer scientists, but they say completely nothing. Our experience is from EAQUAS that if you choose 3 or more algorithms, if you select 3 or more columns, then in about 90-95% you can rank the word that you would like to choose within the top 5. Of course, it makes sense to choose as much as possible, but typically it's a time matter. As much algorithm as you choose, as more time it needs. What we have not done so far. Currently, we developed a proof of concept implementation. So, can we really apply spell checking techniques on ANCH text in order to make suggestions? So, we'd never dealt before with how can we store those data in the apparatus criticus. This is something that we did on us so far. So, for this reason, we are interested in a collaboration this year. On the other hand, I go back some slides. For example, this here. Alessandro is on the second place, makes sense, but so far every algorithm is on the same level. Every algorithm provides a score, and we count the number of algorithms that provide a score so far. And maybe it doesn't make sense, we never tested it in real, if we have here the 4 letters, to make a post-selection in order to remove, for example, this word, this word, this word, this word, this word, to move, sort them out. This maybe makes sense, but again, we never tested it so far. I said it before, at the moment we have already prepared 30 algorithms. We have just a small amount of algorithms in the portal. It's too difficult to have, if you have too many options, the classicists or humanists are typically this is my experience, cannot deal with that. So we made a small set of algorithms. I think it's important to find out what makes sense and what could work, but have not a real contribution. I said it also before, having the light convention, and this is interesting for the classics, for working with the classicists. On OCR correction, it's technically boring. Yeah, you have damage text, you have an algorithm for identifying the damaged word, you have the problem I mentioned before, and then you just straightforward suggest a word. But having the Leiden conventions, the very interesting question is, having every predicate in the convention has a dedicated meaning, can we find for every predicate a significant set of algorithms that we have not to choose 5, 6, 7 algorithms to rank the word on the highest position, but you have, for example, just 3. Yeah, it's just a computational matter and a matter of how strongly we can automatize those. What I've shown here is that we only suggest words, but of course it would be fine to have it strongly automatized and having the words automatically annotated. But this needs to be done for here. I assume this needs about half year, maybe a year additional work. This is also important. What are good training data for the suggestions? Yeah. On the one hand, I said it before, if you train on the EpiTurk database, it doesn't make sense to complete something from the TLG. And quite often, you have this is the key to make automatized word suggestions really possible. If you have the wrong data, you find nothing. Yeah, and I mentioned that as well. Technically, going back to the first task, what is of your interest for the correction, especially if you do not have the Leiden convention. For the computer, it's actually more or less the same if you have a spelling error, an OCR error, or any variant on historical text, if you have loan words or even person names. Yeah. So technically, all of the person names are highly difficult to detect, though with the Kurt Fendt, maybe some of you know him from MIT. We are working now on English texts from the US government, and so we have a lot of names from the Persian world, and they follow completely different world building rules. And typically, if you are not aware of that, every person name from the Persian world is suggested for as a wrong word, and so this is very difficult. Loan ones are very, very difficult, and OCR errors to make a separation between these clusters. This is if you do not have the Leiden convention, this is the main challenge. What makes the first task to the most challenging, or the more difficult task than the second one? If you have a good algorithm for the first one, to find a suggestion for that is quite simple, actually. Questions?
First, can we thank you? Okay, so. So there was one question that occurred to me while you were talking, which I now think I've got the answer to, so I will ask it and then answer it, but you'll tell me if I'm right. I was wondering why you were using words that were already restored, so words that whether there were letters in square brackets, because they were restored by the editor,
yep,
on your thing, rather than starting with fragments of words that were not restored.
This was just for my toy sample.
I assume the answer is because that would be to test your results.
So this was just an example of Pi that I had, and as you see here in my test, I removed everything.
You actually removed even more, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. This was just, I had this, I do not understand Greek. And sure. I had no skills about ancient traditions, and I need an example as this, since I know what stands there. If I know Alexander is there, then I can start to modify the string.
So then the interesting test would be, if you, does this, is this
actually ever going to suggest anything that a papyrologist wouldn't be able to figure out anyway? That's the question that you've got. If you start with a piece of papyrus that, I mean, in this piece of papyrus, every missing word has been restored by the editor.
Okay.
But often you'll find a papyrus or an inscription where plenty of words have been restored, but towards the end of each line, there's just a break and, you know, there's nothing restored.
What would we be able to do with that? What would be your expectation?
I wouldn't want to guess.
Yeah.
because very often what you do is you recognize a poor one at the end of the break, you see something which leads into a formula, which is so common. Because we work by pattern recognition.
Yeah.
And this is pattern recognition.
Which is very similar,
I mean, this is a speeding up of a process that we already carry out.
Yes. But we do sometimes have editions published, both papyri and inscriptions, where there are three letters which are not part of the preceding word at the end of a line, and we can't restore one more letter in there. But we know there is a gap of, well, an indefinite gap because the papyrus was just torn off and we don't know what it was. That would be a good candidate for trying out, especially for the co-occurrence things, because I'm sure the papyrologist looked in the dictionary and tried to find any words here they could think of that began with those three letters. But co-occurrence and sort of thing, would that come up with suggestions that might be better than what the editor had come up with first place? That would be very interesting.
The question is what you understand by better. I think the thing is to clarify what text mining is doing. Text mining is not a human prey. It's all the cognitive ability. Yeah. For this reason, I had anywhere in the beginning the slide in. Yeah. The computer has not the cognitive ability of a human or the qualitative ability of a human being. But the computer can read the entire prose. And he can do that in a completely unbiased way. So you should understand those kind of techniques more as reading even those passages that you would never expect, that you would never look in. Yeah, this is a benefit from those computer techniques. And I think your question, or the answer of the question, is extremely difficult. Then there's any trade-off between those.
Right.
I think on the one hand, if you have something in that requires highly cognitive skills, this is wrong, this will never work, yeah, guaranteed. But if you want to provide some suggestions just by quantity, yeah, even in those text passages that you have never read before and that you do not aware of, that there could be something in. Yeah, and for exactly those, it's fine. So sure. The quantity stuff, yeah, though Moretti said distant and close reading, yeah. So those techniques are excellent for giving a suggestion from a very, very distant reading. Yeah. So what you mentioned on a particular papyrus inscription is extremely close to the text. So what you said was that only one letter is missed or something like that on the line. Yeah. This is something that the computer is typically not can predict. So it doesn't matter for him if there's the end of the papyri. He can suggest you something that, let's say, seven more letters would be in the line, even if this would not make sense to a humanist.
Sure.
Yeah. This would happen. But again, this is, at the moment, it's just a suggestion tool.
Yes.
It's not something that replaces in an automatized way something.
Yes. Yeah. I guess what I was thinking is that it would be nice to get to do a suggestion. I mean, I know this is as far as you've got, but as a next step to do that suggestion with papyrus that breaks at the end of a line, and then go back to the papyrologist, ideally to the editor of this
the
papyrus,
practical,
and say, what do you think of these suggestions?
Yeah. The practical thing is to get experience from the real-world research. So for this reason, I have not in any plots of our results. Since what we have done is we took 1,000 papyri and put official in errors, and of course that we changed, we replaced them, we damaged the words officially, and so we know what was in before, and so we can test it. But it's a very, very unofficial way to test it. For this reason, I have it not in here. So for computer science, it would be fine to show how excellent your work is done, but what you're saying is more the practical thing, and for this reason, I skipped it out. This would be for the wrong audience for that.
Because what struck me was very much the same as what Charlotte just said. that the methods Paparologists or Epigraphist uses to try and restore words sounded to me very similar to all the methods you were using.
Yeah.
I mean, they were, you know, let's compare to what other words occur in this context, let's compare to, you know, these sorts of things. And I'm pretty sure that's what, you know, Georg and Mario were doing when they were looking, they're the only two Paparologists in the room, as far as I'm aware, were doing when you said, what do you think goes in there? Everyone else just sort of looked at it.
Also on documentary, yeah. Harry?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
because we can use the existing search tools to find the words that are near sort of strings or.
Okay, then we make a deal. My like dreams. By end of August, yeah, earlier it's too difficult for me. I provide online for you and for you, yeah, and everybody else who is interested in. Online version that you can access, excluding all the TLG stuff, just the training base database for the IFIDOC, and then I'm interested for your feedback from the practical side. Does that make sense? Yeah? So I'm interested in that, since, again, I know how computer scientists would evaluate those techniques, but I come from the side and I have some serious doubts that this would be the right way.
Pre-processing you mentioned.
Yeah.
How long time does it all take? I mean,
pre-processing.
How much do you do about it? I mean, if you need to tokenize syntactic, semantic.
I have to ask, do you mean to be aware of the time that you need to be aware what are the right settings or the time for doing it?
Well, if it's very large pops.
Yeah.
What does it take?
So I do come from a natural language processing group.
Yeah.
This means the corpora such as the Duke database are very small for us. Yeah. So we are dealing more with corpora such as 600 million sentences and more. Yeah. This is what we are playing with, so we can be sure that pre-processing techniques that we are working on are extremely fast. Yeah. Otherwise, you can stop to work with that corpora. So to say it, to give you some numbers, if I have a statistical engine that computes all the training data, if I put the epijoke into the engine, I have to say the sentences are already, or the corpus is already sentence segmentized. This is a requirement. Given this, it takes just 10 minutes, not more. And given this, including pre-processing and all training steps that I showed here, it does not take more than 4 or 5 hours for the EPICHIP database. But I have also to say I highly optimized that during the last 5 years.
But that's how long the machine takes to do it. How long did it take you to set it up?
That's the point. Though the training stuff, it's more or less simple. Though for the pre-processing, it depends on what you're interested in. This is more an iterative process of testing what works and setting, computing the data.
Yeah.
So pre-processing is key to everything and those mining techniques.
Yeah.
So for example, if you are aware of diacritics, this completely can change your result set.
Yeah.
And if you switch it on or off, this will completely have a strong influence on your training data. I know for my thesis, it's unbelievable.
I was very pleased that you said you thought that pre-processing had about 60% of the influence on the quality of your results, because I recently did a text mining project with ancient Greek texts, and pre-processing took about 50% of our time.
Yeah.
So I'm
also working as IT consultant for very big companies, and it's always the same. They come to me and ask, oh, Marco, we want to have benefit comparing us with other providers of search engine technology, for example. And they want to have something like extremely complex algorithms that require several weeks to compute and all the stuff. And I say, stop, we go back to the first step. And after we process that text, this is not only a matter of engine text, it's on mining as well in general. Yeah, and they are highly surprised with making two, three things a different way. It takes a month, but there are just minor changes, how strong the influences are. And So every experienced text miner would say to you, 50, probably much more percent, really just pre-processing. But you do not clean there, you are training wrong.
It seems to me that what you're developing and creating is a very valuable resource which can then be used for all sorts of other things. Surely, that the work you've put into the pre-processing provides a body of data which could be used for your purpose, but it could also be interrogated in lots of other ways as well.
Yeah.
That the linguistic analysis of ancient Greek should be taking huge strides forward as a consequence of what you've done.
Maybe I should mention IACO is a bit difficult project since our researchers are mainly interested in the TLG, though no one has really had real world experiences with IACO since everything is behind password. Yeah, so this is a bit difficult, but if you're interested in anything that I presented here, that you heard about IACO, just contact me. If you are talking about algorithms, about tools, we can speak about anything. Yeah.
What interested me is precisely the distinction between TLG and Epiduke, because I think that in terms of the history of the Greek language, the relationship between documentary language and literary language, which on the whole the TLG is, and epigraphic language, which you've also got, which is something else, is extremely interesting. And that the potential for the linguistic analysis of how Greek is used in these different corpora.
Yeah.
Complicated, not simple.
I made this work about 1.5 years ago. I do not have it recently in my mind, but I can send you something. Mm. I have to think about that, though probably, as I understand you, it would make sense to choose the words, go on letter or bio trigrams for TLG and for other corpora, and then compute Burroughs data. So as I understand you, this would be help you. So this is something I can do within a day.
So yes, I was thinking about syntactical structures, typical syntactical structures in different kinds of document, which is something we kind of know about, but people haven't been able to compute on a large scale.
Yeah. So I have to re-ask. So we choose the words that occur in both corpora, and then we could look, for example, for the syntactical stuff and for the differences.
Well, I was actually thinking, having segmented all these these texts into sentences, that's a huge piece of work, actually.
So whenever you adjust in those things, let us keep in contact. So this sounds to me like a bachelor's thesis that we can have in Leipzig. If you have a formulation of a clear topic, though it seems to me not more than a bachelor's thesis to dealing with the text a bit around. So if you can have this, that's fine. You have my email address.
I do.
This is slightly tangential, and you might have touched on it anyway. But I mean, to what extent do specific features of Greek or Latin affect the algorithms that you create?
I don't understand what your point is.
Well, I mean, for instance, the idea of what is semantically contiguous will be different in an inflected language than in something like English, where we use Latin words, right? I mean, you can use, assuming that the language is grammatically constructed, you could, with more confidence, predict what words are related to each other in Greek and Latin than you could in English because of the inflected character of the languages. I mean, does that have a significant impact on the kind of algorithms you create?
So this is a similar topic we had yesterday at the interface conference, and yes, it has. So if I deal with text mining techniques, even if I'm interested in semantics, I never make any kind of base form reduction. Yeah. So in English, you have only singular and plural, and no other options. But on ancient Greek or in German, in Germany you have four cases. Keep the tag as it is. Capitalization is fine, dealing with dialect prefixes is fine. But what experience I made is to keep the inflection of the text for the training step. I will explain why. My thesis is about text reviews. Yeah, so looking for a book what's you. And I like my example that I presented 2 years ago in this seminar about from Plato talking about the bomb. Yeah. So in the text passage, bomb or metra in ancient Greek occurs in the third or fourth case. I do not know the actual metra. Yeah. Whenever you see metrai in the TLG, it occurs 7 times. 6 times, it's for sure part of the quotation. The sentence it's an answer. So this means if you have if you observe metrai in this case, yeah, more or less it's an every occurrence exactly a quotation. Now you do make base form reduction. Yeah, so you have only metra in the text, and you have a frequency of metra of 6 or 7 thousand. Yeah, and the quotation is just a small piece of the semantic word from metra, and more or less, this example I tested it would be below the thresholds, below a statistical threshold. Yeah, you do not have to solve by making mathematization in this step. So I did investigate this very systematically, and more or less we made several experiences in the same field. Yeah, for example, not on ancient text but on modern applications. So, for example, we classified them, or the semantic classification, and typically you can observe that a word, even if you make a semantic classification, yeah, occurs in a semantic classification always in a dedicated inflected version. Yeah, and if you do remove this, you do not have to decide, you have much poorer quality. Though I know this is something I have to learn to deal with that. Yeah. Though on the first point of view, it seems to be not sense making. But if you are applying stuff again, yeah, and you see this case and this case or this scenario and this scenario, and every time you mix, you get worse results. Yeah. You have to learn. Yeah. And you have to accept it. Yeah. Maybe it's a difference between I come from natural language processing group. Natural language processing means on the one hand to put search engines. Yeah, here it's highly important to reduce to the base form or to find all affected versions if you on the hit list. But for mining itself, at least for the training step, yeah, it is very very difficult since you can observe a relation between two words that in an inflected version that would be reduced down if you make base form reduction. I know I had to learn it as well, and it's hardly to describe without good examples that I can present here. I have to affect it, yeah. It's an experience, yeah, lessons learned.
I'll just say I love that. It's counterintuitive to me that lemmatizing everything would be throwing up too much information, but after thinking about it a little bit, that makes perfect sense to me.
If you are interested, then I can write down in my dirty English 1 or 2 pages a bit more explaining this stuff. You also can show this by hypothesis testing models, a statistical model that you make things worse if you do lemmatization. Yeah. And but it's very, very difficult to explain it just by words without an example.
I was thinking about what fun it would be to apply this to fragments that are not contiguous. So you've got fragments which clearly come from the same document or text, but you aren't quite sure how far over in the line. You know, you've got the beginning of the line, and then you've got another fragment. You're not quite sure where it is in the line. Some of our real jigsaw puzzle.
Yes.
It would be very interesting to see how that worked.
So exactly this method will not be the solution. Sorry, will not be the solution. They need an additional work to be done, but I like the idea.
It'd be fun.
This is the kind of research I like to work with humanists, yeah. In computer science, no one would deal with that, yeah. You would plot your lines, and you would be happier that you have nice plots, yeah, and that's all. Yeah, but I like that idea, yeah.
And it could be exceptionally useful, actually, because when if you're looking at a text with a hole in it,
yeah.
The scholar often, you know, can simply fill the hole, as we've been saying earlier, because they've got it in their head. But when you have a jigsaw puzzle of disconnected fragments, it's actually far more difficult to take your memory and impose possible patterns on those fragments. So I think the benefits, the return, might be particularly good.
It could also help, you know, really, really difficult texts where you're sort of hypothesizing, I think that's an A.
Mm-hmm.
If I make that an animal, does that do it?
Yes, yes.
It could be really helpful with that sort of thing.
Could be even useful if you define text, say, this is a votive text, or this is part of an obstruct or something, which actually narrows down the possibilities.
Yes, I think that you had a classification thing, didn't you? And that would be quite if you didn't have a distance thing at all, you'd certainly need classification limitation to make something possible.
Focused
in particular. Maybe I should mention one thing that I think this is important for the understanding. Using those kind of machine learning techniques can also provide you suggestions that you have seen before. Yeah? So you can suggest a word that you have never seen before in the entire course. This is maybe an important thing I should mention. This is a restriction to in comparison with a human brain. Yeah. I have to point to that. Yeah.
It's really a specialism. If you are, for instance, specialized in cursive text, I would really see it. I want a computer to see it from that particular specialty or expertise. If one could find a system, or you could actually tweak it to another way to say, what's your expertise? Because a cursive text or some other text, you could actually look for people who are actually familiar with this. And this is not in a general sort of way, but it's more specialized. You could sort of pinpoint or focus on particular areas, which narrows down, as Charles said.
Michael, you mentioned that so that you can only, you have a certain corpus, and you have certain occurrences of words, but you will never get suggestions outside of that corpus. Doesn't that kind of imply some sort of circular reasoning, that you will never actually get suggestions outside of that corpus, so you basically you're doing the same thing over and over and over again? Are there ways of actually identifying these things that are not part of the corpus? Maybe what you would call a latent relationship or something, you know? Something that you are actually not aware of.
Yeah, so maybe I have to explain briefly what a latent relation is. Give me a second.
I'm sorry.
Otherwise, it would be probably too difficult.
I mean, I don't know how big the corpuses are. Maybe we just cover like every word in existence in pepperology. I don't know. But you know, it's the same kind of argument people have against predictive modeling in archaeology. That I mean, if you base your knowledge of predicting something on the things you already know, you will never find something new. It kind of sounds like that.
Well, notice these are documentary, these are documentary, aka boring, as opposed to, and they've carefully excluded the literary, you see. But the nature of documents, they're relying on the possibility that the nature of documents is very repetitive. But I think you must be right. That the danger of not picking up the.
Exactly, yeah. Well, I think these kind of techniques also have the potential of identifying those places. And I'm wondering.
So on the one hand, you are right, the predicting model just can provide you things that you have seen before. For this reason, it is highly important to have the last column in the classification. Yeah? By the classification column, you suggest a word that depends to a class and not has seen before in this context. So this was really the classification is highly important, not only to make suggestions that you are already aware of. Yeah, this is important. This is the latent relation of the contrast of semantics. So typically, computer scientists work with language models. Language models have something to do with predicting something. Yeah, and so for example, I pick out this word here, and this word is in a strong cluster, the red one, with lots of associations. And the same I have on the right-hand side. And this is what typically computer scientists do with those kind of semantic occurrences. So after about 2 years, a bit less, 1.5 years of EACVM, I realized that exactly this is quite boring. Yeah. What you can see here is something like, if I would ask you what do you associate with butter? Yeah, you think cheese, marmalade, and other stuff you typically eat during breakfast. So this is boring. Yeah, and so I realized that if you want to suggest a word, a keyword, for example, I look for example for odomastai. Yeah, what do you associate with odomastai? So these are the typical used words, but you would probably not associate this word here. If I'm right, this is the antarctic word for penis. Yeah, and at least the class has told me that. I have no idea what's on that. The important thing is, computer scientists typically would now say, we make a cut here and have two different clusters. Yeah. So for the colors, yeah, the green cluster and the red cluster. But I realized that exactly those kind of relations are of high interest for humanists. Yeah, since they are completely not expected. Yeah, though we have a relation between two words that typically occur in two different semantic clusters. And so the story behind that is it goes back to Aristophanes in the 5th century BC, and he says, "Oh, how can you, the odomastai, really think?" I paraphrase that. How can you, the odomastai, really believe that you can go and war with us if you do not hide your penis behind a leaf? And this is a story about this edge. Interesting is those kind of latent relations or contrast semantics are of highest interest. If you, for example, observe something like quotations, yeah, you would probably never. This is part of my thesis. You would probably never quote something like "milk is white and good for you." Yeah, everybody knows that. Yeah, so if you come home and say this to your girl, she says, "Oh my God, you work too much in London." Yeah, and but those kind of patterns, yeah, that you would not expect are typically quoted. Yeah, it's a very very pragmatic approach to identify points of interest in text. And the interesting point is this edge is, for this reason, statistically significant since it's quoted. Yeah, this edge here between odomastai and penis is just for this reason statistically significant since it's quoted 3 or 4 times. Yeah, and this is an interesting point. We had briefly this discussion before, and we had a discussion yesterday. The idea behind that, to build an algorithm to identify exactly this edge here, is extremely simple. You just have to have the idea. This stuff is really, really boring to implement. It's just work.
One thing I find interesting about the process you just outlined here is that, again, that kind of confirmation bias that you identified as a problem is something that humans do all the time. And you see this in literary scholarship, right? I mean, the Tom Stoppard version of the history of Copernicus, which is not far off from the actual history, is that you had a whole bunch of scholars saying, "Oh my God, we've got all these fragments about love and all these fragments about war. What kind of crazy poem is this?" And then, of course, somebody's like, "Ah, well, actually, one is, you know, a trope for the other." And so it was kind of built into scholarship. So I almost wonder if there wouldn't be an application for telling scholars that they don't know as much as they think they do, that if you've got low probabilities, that they shouldn't jump into the one that they think makes sense immediately.
That's the key. And there's another presentation. I have here my toy sample with beer and diapers. this is exactly my starting point. Yeah, this is what you said after centuries of millennia that texts, ancient texts, are already well studied. The question is, you do not have to tell humanists what they already know. You have to find something that they do not know. Yeah, and this is, for example, the starting point for to come into the context of semantics. This is the first slide of the section, but another topic, maybe for next year. So I have here the example of Herodot. Yeah, if you want to find out which keywords you have to type in or to find something of interest, you typically type in keywords that you are aware of. Yeah, but you would probably not type in, if you have onomastic, to type in penis. Yeah, or my example is beer. Yeah, you would probably not type in, if you are looking at look for beer, to also type in diapers or nappies. Yeah, though we would never have in mind this association. Okay, maybe we should explain the example between diapers and beer. I mentioned that too often now. Yeah. So this was my example for the contrast of semantics. So the question is, what is the relation between beer and diapers? Yeah, and so I highlight the relevant text passages. Yeah, so why the context is important. There are several stories about that. So this is an example from data mining, from analyzing supermarket receipts, and so they found out that diapers and beer are quite often bought together. Yeah, and this was the original idea, realizing that the obvious is not important.
But it's nice here. You see, you provided a context, the supermarket.
So
it would be nice if one of the choices which you suggested, you actually if you have any contextual information you add it in. So we'll either reinforce your suggestion or actually rule it out.
Sure.
I don't know. I mean, it's just whatever you've done is fantastic. So I think
the key is, I agree with you to provide the context, but on the other hand, those mining techniques are good to show you what could be of your interest, and then you go and do the text itself. Yeah, I can extract those information, but this is an additional task, and probably I spend a lot of time with making it more or less working. And I assume it would be better if you have a contrast of semantic like beer and diapers here, and you are interested in that, then go into the text and go into distance reading and understand it as a human being with your cognitive ability. So, for example, if you go in this text, it's quite difficult to find out what would be the context here. So this I have done as a human being, doing the same stuff, or let the computer decide what is important here. I assume that I need about half a year to make it on a real, applicable level.
Should we thank Marco Rotten for a very stimulating talk?